This is Stephen Strang. I want to introduce my listeners to Charisma Magazine if you don't already get it. Or if you do get it, you could respond to this special offer and we will continue your subscription into the future. The offer is to give you both of my books on Donald Trump, God and Donald Trump, and the new one, Trump Aftershock. These are a value of just less than $50, plus 2 years of Charisma, which cost around $40, and you can get the whole thing for only $39. Now let me repeat, you get both of my best-selling books and 2 years of Charisma for only $39, and all you have to do is go to this site, trumpbooks.charismamag.com. I'll repeat it, but the good thing about a podcast is you can back it up and listen to it again. Is trumpbooks.charismamag.com. I hope you'll take advantage of this offer. Even if you have read the books, you know, it's always nice to have a new book, especially one signed by the author. It makes a good birthday present. Later in the year, it'll make a good Christmas present. And I hope that you'll take advantage of it because it's a good offer and it's my way to try to connect you with Charisma and also get more copies of my book out there. Thank you for listening to The Strang Report, and here's my episode.
Welcome to The Strang Report with Steve Strang on the Charisma Podcast Network. This episode was produced to discuss and address issues within our nation and around the world from a Christian worldview.
If you've been following the news, you know that Venezuela is falling apart. It's incredible that the country once described as the most prosperous in South America is now in total chaos, and it's because of socialism. Hello, everyone. I'm Stephen Strang, and welcome to The Strang Report. On my podcast and newsletter, I cover a wide variety of things. Most of them have to do with the Christian community. But today, I'm going to talk about a very important social and political issue and to explain what is going on in Venezuela by interviewing a man that I recently met in St. Augustine, Florida. His name is Michael Sabka. He was born in Venezuela. And when I ran into him and heard him tell a little bit of his story, I said, "This is interesting. I'd like to sit down and interview you for a podcast." As I got to know Michael, he's a successful businessman. He's lived in the United States since the 1980s, as he describes, but he was born in Venezuela. His father was in the oil business, and he has watched as his country of birth has fallen into total disaster. He is a born-again Christian, and he gives us insight that only someone from that country could. I've personally been baffled about how all this could happen, even though we know that countries that have taken on socialism have fallen into despair, but at least a lot of them function, even at a low level. But listen to my interview with Michael Sabka. You'll learn something, and you'll also hear the passion as he talks about how this is affecting people that he knows. Michael, you were born in Venezuela, so you understand the situation down there in ways that most Americans don't know. When you were a little boy, what was Venezuela like?
Venezuela was a prosperous, beautiful, great country to live in. Great education system, great economy, buildings, highways. One of the most advanced medical facilities in the world were in Venezuela when we were growing up. The freeway systems were unparalleled in South America. It was a country that was built with foundations that would last multiple generations. Real powerful country and prosperous, like I said, and a country that had real freedoms like in the U.S., freedoms of expression, freedoms of just culturally speaking, religious. Venezuela, for example, has one of the biggest populations of evangelism in Latin America. People don't realize that sometimes. But that's the kind of country that Venezuela was when we grew up.
Well, you told me earlier that your father worked for the oil company. You moved to the United States in the 80s. Your parents moved out in the 90s. Hugo Chavez, of course, came in the late 90s. Can you explain how a country as prosperous as you just described could devolve into the chaos that we read about and hear about in the news.
Absolutely, absolutely. There's a lot of reasons and a lot of different opinions on how Venezuela went from being such a great country into the chaotic situation that it is now. Various people will give you various points of view. My point of view is one that is a very simplistic point of view, which has to do with the fact that when we were kids growing up in Venezuela, the borders between Colombia and Venezuela were very porous, and actually they still are. There's never been, per se, like an actual fence or border or any such thing. It's just open country with sort of like a highway that unites both countries. And then, of course, there's a customs facility on both sides, etc. But when you look at the immense piece of land that is in between Venezuela and Colombia, and much of it is in the jungle areas, it's really open country. People can go in either direction. Now, in the 70s and 80s, what really happened, and this is my opinion, is that Colombia was, as you know, a very poor and just devastated country. They were under the grip of really bad drug cartels. We all know about Pablo Escobar and the Cartel de Cali and what those people did to Colombia, which was basically turned into a war zone.
Well, I had reason to go to Colombia back in that era, and I was told not to go, that it was just much too dangerous.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you could get shot any time of the day or night in the streets. There were car bombs going off. I mean, absolutely no security whatsoever. And the desperation of those people, they had to flee the country. And the quickest and easiest thing was to go to Venezuela, right next door, of course, very convenient. But also, Venezuela was so rich and there was so much work that those people would come in and they would find work, and they would eventually, many of them would actually do better for their families and their lives. And Venezuelans welcomed that. The problem was that for a long period of time, I'm talking two decades, the migration of these people was so intense and so heavy that it got to a point where the Venezuelan system couldn't deal with them anymore. They couldn't support them. They couldn't offer them education. And what you ended up was with what we call belts of poverty around the cities, cordones we call them. They're just around the cities. You'll see these poor areas with shacks and mountains that would fill up with really, really poor shacks that were built out of cardboard and things like that and wood. And then when the rains came, they would wash them down into the rivers and people would lose their lives. I mean, it was a really horrible thing. But that poverty, the Venezuelan government couldn't deal with it, and the religious institutions couldn't deal with it. And that created an atmosphere where people that were poor were having children that then were also poor, and they were not being incorporated into society. And that went on for, you know, all through the 70s, the 80s. During the 90s, it probably slowed down a little bit, but it was already such a big problem that at that point, you had somebody like Hugo Chavez, who came in 1998, speaking the language of the people, of the common poor people, offering them a future that was, let's put it this way, giveaways, you know, health system giveaways, and even food and money, just handouts to help him get through the tough
times. So these poor people voted for him and put him in office. They were able to outvote the people that were more middle class, I guess you'd say?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So when Hugo Chavez got in, he had close ties to Cuba. Was he actually a communist, or was he just accused of being a communist?
He was definitely a communist. I mean, he was definitely a follower of Fidel, of the Marxist ideologies that came with all of that movement that swept through not only Cuba, but all of Latin America. In fact, a lot of people would be shocked to learn that Fidel Castro actually invaded Venezuela not only once, but twice. During after he was already in Cuba, he made various incursions into Venezuela to try to invade Venezuela, because of course they were after the oil and the money and the power that came with oil, and he failed. He basically failed. We had a gentleman who was a president by the name of Marcos Perez Jimenez, who was later named as a dictator, basically. But what he was a leader who basically squashed the socialist and communist movement, not only in Venezuela, but in a great part of Latin America. But Hugo Chavez grew up listening to the stories of Fidel and how he came to Venezuela and how he wanted Venezuela to be under the communist regime, let's say, of Latin America. And then basically Hugo Chavez came in 1998 and hand-delivered Venezuela to the Cubans, if you can really put it in a simple.
So here was a prosperous country described as the most prosperous country in Latin America. And I have been to Argentina and Brazil, and I consider them both prosperous. So I'm saying to myself, even though I've never been to Venezuela, Venezuela was better than that with all this oil. But I've also been to Nigeria and seen the poverty. And of course, they have a lot of oil too. So oil itself doesn't make a country great. But you're describing a very vibrant Venezuela that has fallen into such chaos that they don't even have electricity. No. The inflation is, someone told me, 10,000,000%.
Yes,
I mean, you can't even fathom that. Uh-huh. And people don't have enough to eat. And it all started kind of with mass migration that ended up voting in a socialist. And then when the socialists got in, what did they do that created all this economic chaos?
Well, the first thing they do is they go after the constitution. So whatever constitution is in place, they're going to go and change it. And that's a textbook definition of what Marxism is and what communists do. And they go into the country, and the first thing they're going to do is what I call fix the constitution in a way where they can perpetuate their power forever and ever, amen, basically, and you see it in Cuba. The second thing they do is they infiltrate the electoral system. So now they can stay in power forever. They will infiltrate the apparatus of the elections, and that way they basically fix the elections so they're always winning. And there are many, many instances where Hugo Chavez brought in these voting machines, electronic machines, where he got to control the results. I mean, it was just blatant.
And there was no one to stop him or no institution to stop him. And then didn't he nationalize the oil companies?
Well, actually, the nationalization of oil happened in the late 70s by a group of politicians that were actually, you know, the Democratic parties, basically, the parties that were running the country during the 60s, 70s, and 80s, and 90s. It was a two-party system in Venezuela, similar to the U.S., and they just kind of shared power back and forth, and eventually all of them got corrupted, and they were all part of the system. So, you know, it was 4 years one, 4 years the other. And they went back and forth, and they all got to basically steal all this money from the people and the country. Although in those days, those were the prosperous days, they knew how to run the economy. These were smart politicians. They were educated people. They knew how to create an economy and create an educational system. And basically what they did was this. They were politicians, and they were in the business of running the politics. And then they allowed the private sector to build the country. They were a very smart group of people. And so that's why Venezuela was so prosperous, is because the government was actually very minimal in what they did, really. But the nationalization of oil happened in 1977. And at first, it was actually a very good thing. The American companies were still in there, meaning, you know, Mobil, Shell. And that's where my father worked in Mobil Oil. He was the CFO of Mobil in Venezuela, and they nationalized the industry in a way where it was still being basically run by the American oil companies. What Hugo Chavez and his group did was they basically fired all those people and started putting their own people to run the oil companies and basically ran them to the ground, because at that point, there was really no knowledge on how to run any kind of business. I mean, these were political cronies that were, my, you know, say, my friend, you're my friend. Hey, guess what? You're going to be running that oil company now. And you probably never even knew how to run a company or an oil company, even less. And then recently, it got even worse, where Maduro, the current illegitimate president who we're trying to overthrow, Maduro put military personnel to run the oil companies so he can control them and take all the proceeds of those companies into his coffers. So that's how quickly you can destroy an industry so powerful as the oil industry. In about 15 years, they basically dismantled the whole thing. And Venezuela went from producing 3.5 million barrels per day of oil. And right now they're down to about 600,000, of which 400,000 were being purchased by the U.S. And now they're not even being purchased because Donald Trump placed an embargo on Venezuelan oil, meaning the U.S. is no longer buying Venezuelan oil because they're trying to cut whatever income is going into the Maduro regime. And they did the right thing. But basically, the industry was already falling apart. And that's why there's no money. There's no electricity. So, of course, the money that used to go into the electrical grids and into the water system and into medicines, that money is gone, and they're not going to replace that money. They're basically letting the country fall into an abyss.
Two last questions. The first is, what do you think is going to happen next with Venezuela?
Well, first of all, I think that the right thing is happening, which is the opposition now is under the leadership of Mr. Juan Guaido, who's basically the president of the House of Representatives. So he would be what in the U.S. would be equivalent to the Speaker of the House, who is the next person in power after the presidency, same as in the U.S. And what's called a National Assembly, which is the parliament in Venezuela, was elected by the Venezuelan people. And it was the last round of elections that took place in Venezuela, I believe, about 3 or 4 years ago, and it was the last legitimate election that ever happened in Venezuela. So that body, which is still in power, because in the last presidential election, Maduro basically ran an illegitimate scheme, and the world community recognized it. He got named as a illegitimate president. In other words, the worldwide community didn't recognize him, except for some countries, of course, like Cuba and Iran and China and so on. But the great amount of countries around the world did not recognize that election as proper and as legitimate. So the only body left, which was now the parliament, named Mr. Guaido to be the provisionary president of Venezuela, and now all the nations have recognized him. So to answer the question is, first of all, what is happening is we are now seeing this new government emerging, which is going to replace the Maduro regime eventually. We don't know when, but it's already being recognized by all the countries in the world, most of the countries in the world. And with the great support of President Trump, and people like Marco Rubio and Rick Scott and a number of U.S. diplomats and politicians that are backing Mr. Guaido's presidency. So that's number one. And number two, Brazil and Colombia are playing a big role into this because they're actually being affected by the situation in Venezuela. So they are actually more interested than anybody else in seeing the situation come to an end. What's going to happen next is, I believe, at some point, and this is the part that is very personal to me, I think that Mike Pompeo and the Trump administration are putting together what we can call some kind of military intervention. Because what happens is that you have a humanitarian crisis going on. You have thousands and thousands of basically containers, shipping containers filled with aid, that are sitting in the border of Venezuela and Colombia in a city called Cúcuta. And Cúcuta is ready. There is almost like a staging field on how this aid is going to get into Venezuela. And at that point, Maduro will collapse and Mr. Guaido will have to sit with the military regime, and they're going to figure out a system, and they'll have free elections. And that's how this country is going to move forward.
And my last question is, what can we learn in the United States from this, especially since for the first time in recent memory, socialists are being very outspoken, especially in the Democratic Party, some of the people running for president. And also there's this huge problem with illegal immigrants coming across our border, like you described, between Colombia and Venezuela.
Absolutely, Stephen. Let me tell you, it is very scary. And the number one, the most important thing right now is we have to stop this immigration flow in the southern border of the U.S. And at some point, the northern border, because we're going to have a problem with Canada as well. But what happens is that the number one reason, again, when we first started this podcast, and the number one reason that Venezuela fell into the chaos that they're in today is very simple. Open borders and no control of immigration. This is what started the whole thing. And this is what is happening in the United States. And we have to find a way to stop that flow, whether it's building the wall or whether it's just creating a technological wall with technology and putting resources to stop the flow and also stop the cartels from getting into the United States, because that's part of the problem. And then as far as the politicians that are starting to pop up, like AOC and you know, Bernie and the whole crowd of leftists that is now up and coming in the Democratic Party, it's hard to say, because see, that's the part about America. You know, America is, we can't just round up these people and throw them in jail, right? Because then we become a dictatorship as well. They will have a voice. But what I believe is the American people don't want to hear those things. And I think what's going to happen eventually is they're going to get rejected by the majority of the people in America, because they know that socialism doesn't work and communism. And I've done a lot of presentations in California, Louisiana, and in Florida now, where I always tell people this. The American people, because of its history and its foundations on freedom and the Judeo-Christian foundations of this country, what I call the everyday American people, and that includes people of all walks of life, but mainly the independents, the people that don't associate with a particular party, they have inside what I call a pendulum, and it's their conscience. And when they see America going too much to the left, something wakes up inside of them that just, it triggers a mechanism that says, this is not America, and we will not stand for this. And this is what we're seeing with the extreme left right now. They will get rejected. The American people will reject that way of system. But we have to be really careful, because what they're doing is they're infiltrating the school system. And they've already done it, actually. And what happens in the future of America, it's a dangerous thing. It's a really dangerous thing. And we have to reverse infiltration that has happened in the educational system, the Common Core, just the control that the unions have over the educational system. And that's something that I speak also to people about. And it starts at home with mom and dad educating their children and teaching them what America is really about. And especially the foundations that are the Judeo-Christian foundations of this country. This is what makes America so unique. And that's what the left is trying to destroy, and what this sort of a world government that we're seeing rise up in the world right now is trying to destroy America because of that, because of the Judeo-Christian principles that founded this country that make it so powerful.
Thank you for listening to this entire interview. It was a little longer than usual, but I thought it was very interesting to try to understand from someone who knows what's really going on in Venezuela and to contemplate what would happen to our great nation if we go down the path of socialism, which many are beginning to espouse. And it would affect not only America, but since America is kind of a policeman and kind of keeps the equilibrium in terms of peace in the world, if America goes down, who knows what tyrants might emerge. So it's extremely important to understand the dangers. And that's why I took the unusual position of talking about politics in South America. It's not exactly what I do on the Strang Report, but I hope that as I travel around to meet people and am able to interview them, that it impacts you and improves your life in some way. If you found this interesting, share it with friends, forward to someone, put it on social media. Help us to increase our listenership and our readership, which is continuing to grow. Thank you for listening to the Strang Report today. I'm Stephen Strang. God bless you.
Thank you for listening to the Strang Report with Steve Strang. To read more from Steve, visit his blog, The Strang Report, on charismamag.com. Again, it's The Strang Report on charismamag.com.
This has been a production of the Charisma Podcast Network. Steve and Joy Strang are the founders and owners of CPN. Dr. Steve Green is the executive producer of the Charisma Podcast Network. We intend to honor God with every podcast and remain thankful to our advertisers and supporters who make these podcasts possible.